Onlangs was ik te gast bij Casey Ruff in zijn podcast Boundless Body Radio. Casey spreekt regelmatig met inspirerende gasten uit de wereld van ketogene therapie en metabole gezondheid. Dit keer dus niet ik als host van de Keto Podcast, maar als gast aan de andere kant van de microfoon.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Boundless Body Radio. I'm your host Casey Ruff and today we have another amazing guest to introduce to you now. Louisette Beckenhorst is the founder of the Ketogen Institute Netherlands, otherwise known as the Ketogenic Institute of the Netherlands. Louisette is the first trainer to offer Dutch language educational programs on ketogenic metabolic therapy. Lifestyle diseases are a term we hear more and more, and Louisette is trying to eliminate this from the world with an effective ketogenic diet. On her website, people can find several guides to following a ketogenic diet. After years of experience as an orthomolecular and ketogenic therapist, she transitioned to imparting knowledge and skills to other health professionals. This allows more people to be supported in taking control of their health. Under the Ketogenic Institute of the Netherlands, several initiatives are offered, including training in ketogenic metabolic therapy, education on metabolic and mental health, a ketogenic lifestyle program, and the Keto Switch Challenge. The offerings also include a consultation with Floor van Leeuwen and Elske Hammer and a platform for other ketogenic professionals. Louisette is also the host of the very successful D Keto podcast, which has well over 300,000 downloads. Louisette Beckenhorst, what an absolute honor it is to welcome you to Boundless Body Radio.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's such an honor to host you. Your podcast is amazing. Unfortunately, I can only listen to a few of the episodes because it's mostly in Dutch. The ones that you have done in English have been absolutely amazing. And you've gotten the very best top stars in the low carbohydrate world to say that, you know, you've maybe only done 5 or 6 interviews with people in English. But those people have been Dr. Ben Bickman, Gary Taubes, Dr. Georgia Ead, Amy Berger, Dr. Westman. Like, oh my goodness, you've done an amazing job getting some wonderful guests. I don't know how you're going to be able to top any of those people.
Oh, I can't. I was so lucky to get them on the show. Yeah.
You did such a great job and you're a really, really good host. You do a really good job listening and asking interesting questions. So it is a pleasure to have you on the show. I have hosted several people from the Netherlands and I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked them, but I'm going to have a little caveat. I'm going to change this a little bit. I'm wondering if I can get adopted as somebody from the Netherlands, but I don't want to have to learn Dutch. Is that still possible? I really want to be in the Orange Army. I'm a big fan of the Netherlands and all kinds of different sports, but do I have to learn Dutch?
To be able to follow one of the programs, you mean?
To be able to be adopted in the country as somebody from the Netherlands.
Oh, no. We have many people recently that don't speak any Dutch, but are still working in our stores or working at the offices because we're such a small country, but there's so much work to do and we have so many immigrants. So I think English is the second main language at the moment.
Okay, that's good. That's awesome. Yeah. I live about 15 minutes away from one of the only covered speed skating ovals in our country here in the Salt Lake Valley. And so anytime there's an event, I like to go watch some of the speed skating. I've done some speed skating in the past. Yeah. And inevitably, an entire corner of the arena is filled with people in orange cheering their guts out. They have the Dutch corner in Alpe d'Huez and the Tour de France. It looks amazing. All the sporting events, seems like all the fans turned out. Of course, my favorite driver in Formula One is Max Verstappen. So there's a lot that I love about the Netherlands, for sure. That language would be really tough. It seems like a very difficult language to learn.
Yes, I can totally imagine that. Yeah.
Good to know I don't have to learn it. Okay, no. So since you are, you know, from the Netherlands and a lot of your content is in Dutch, I actually am not as familiar with your own personal story. We were introduced through our mutual friend, Nicole Laurent, who's amazing. But I don't know that much about how you found any of this stuff to begin with. You are working very, very hard in this space and you're doing amazing work and getting this message out there. But can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing? You know, what it was like to grow up in the Netherlands and what kind of health issues you ended up dealing with?
Yeah, well, fortunately, I didn't end up with any major health issues, but I was just brought up in a regular Dutch fashion, which means sandwiches for breakfast or cereals and sandwiches in school. And in the evening, we would have our potatoes and our pasta and our vegetables. Although I have to say my parents were really health conscious, so we would get whole foods, so no junk food there. I also grew up to be quite tall. I'm over 6'1", so... Like all the Dutch are, they're big. I did many, many things. And only till later on, I discovered I started following my interest for nutrition and health. So I did all kinds of educational programs, from macrobiotics to whole food nutritionist to lifestyle coach and orthomolecular therapist. And only then, the first time I heard about the ketogenic diet, and I just didn't know what it was because I thought I heard it all. So I just started reading about it, started finding out more about it. And I thought, why is nobody doing this? There is no training program in the Netherlands. There's no education. I don't know any coaches or professionals working with this. And yet it seems to be so effective and so, well, powerful to be able to use this, to implement this. Then I started looking around and found the Real Meal Revolution from Professor Tim Noakes, together with John O'Proudfoot. And they had this online training for a bending coach. And I think I did that back in 2016. And I already had my own practice back then as an orthomolecular therapist. And that would mean I would see people coming to me with all kinds of health issues, gut problems, or health or skin issues, for example. And the main thing I would do is trying to find out which nutrients they were lacking and if they had any deficiencies. And I would supplement that and also work on their nutrition and their lifestyle, mainly through a paleo kind of diet, which was already very powerful. But once I discovered the ketogenic diet and once I had done this training, I had a couple of patients that I suggested this to, and they were willing to try it, which is like a step up from the paleo diet to the ketogenic diet. It's not that big, so just cutting more carbs, adding more fats, and they will go through the roof with their results. I would put these people on this diet. I would just help them step by step, implementing it with all the practical advice. And then a couple of weeks later, they would come back to my practice, and there was this completely different person walking in, because they had this different glow. They were energetic. And usually they walked in with a whole list of problems, all kinds of health issues. And only within a couple of weeks, they would come back to me and say, well, this is gone, that is gone. I feel so much better. My weight's going down. I have so much more energy. I feel, well, revived. So at some point, I started to think, maybe I should turn it around. I shouldn't start with the orthomolecular therapy and then implement the ketogenic therapy, but just start with the nutrition. And if there's anything else we need to do, we can use supplements. So that's how I started out.
Wow, that's amazing. I think you're the first person to ever mention that. And I have to look at my notes. Orthomolecular, an orthomolecular scientist. What is that exactly?
Yeah, well, therapist, yes. Orthomolecular is about the small molecules. So usually ortho means right, molecular means molecule. So it's about the right molecules. And usually the therapy consists of supplements like vitamins, minerals, some amino acids, for example. So it means talking to somebody, trying to find out what their lifestyle is, what their problems are, sometimes some blood work as well, just to find out where their deficiencies are. And then supplementing that and also working on lifestyle to prevent new deficiencies from occurring, of course.
I see. Wait, going back to, I guess, before you found the diet, as you were working with somebody, when would you kind of come in and work with somebody? Meaning, like, had somebody already seen several doctors, health professionals, therapists before they saw you, or would you be one of the first people that they would see?
No, I will be down at the end of the line.
Okay.
Yeah.
They've already been in the system, haven't found anything that's really helped them, and they're continuing to look for support.
Yes, especially because orthomolecular therapy here in the Netherlands is considered an alternative therapy, so not a mainstream thing. So that's mainly for people who are willing to search further than their regular treatments or their regular doctors. So most people that came up to my doorstep had tried many, many things, from diets to herbal medicines and the regular treatments, of course. And when nothing helped, they would start looking further and turn up at my doorstep. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I correct in thinking that the Netherlands has a very robust public health system? Like, taxes are a little bit higher, but the state-run medical system is pretty well run. Is that correct?
It's correct, but we do have to pay. It's quite expensive. So we have to take out a medical insurance, that you have to do that. Otherwise, you know, won't get any help anywhere. And it's the prices are going crazy. It's going up and up and up. I remember when I was, well, years and years younger, I would pay only tens of euros per month. And now I'm almost at 200 euros per month that I have to pay for my medical insurance. But it's you have to take it out. You can't do it without. But that means when you have this, that they can get help anywhere. So you can go to the hospital, to any doctor, a specialist, and so on. And then on top of that, you can add extra additional insurance for alternative therapies. Yeah.
Wow, I see. Wow, that is very expensive. That must be frustrating for somebody like you who's metabolically healthy. You probably don't use the medical system for hardly anything.
No, I'm paying for nothing.
Oh my goodness. Wow, that's very steep. Okay, so again, before you found a very powerful kind of dietary intervention, what would be, how would you define success prior to that? Like, what would it look like to work with somebody? How many sessions would it take? Obviously, you're doing the supplements and finding the right, you know, vitamins, minerals, like you said, molecules to help people. What was your success, you know, with a patient? What would that look like?
Well, it really depends on what their problem was that they came in with, of course. Sometimes two sessions were enough to just get somebody going and to send them on their way. And later on, I would get an email saying, I'm still doing great. Thank you so much. And sometimes we will be working for, well, once a month, for example, and then during 8 or 10 sessions to see the major improvement and the major shift. But I still had this feeling that there was more in it, because there was like a ceiling up there. I could supplement them, give them all kinds of advice, and they would go better, 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 but only to a certain point. And I still felt that there was more there. So that's when I came up with the ketogenic or low carb, high fat approach. And then I would see a big difference within weeks. And mostly after a couple of weeks, they didn't really need me anymore. So,
wow, it's pretty nice.
Which is supposed to be a good sign. Yeah,
that is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So again, going back to how you found some of this stuff, what was your motive for learning about any type of a diet? Was it for your own kind of health? Was it for your patients? Like what led you to even look into this stuff? You're right. Like I think a challenge even in, you know, predominantly English speaking countries to kind of find some of this stuff. Other countries have sometimes less resources available. Like what was your motive for thinking about nutrition to begin with?
I don't know. I've always been interested in nutrition and health for some reason. Even as a teenager, I was cutting out articles from magazines on nutrition and health. So apparently that's something that's really always captured me. So that's why when I started all kinds of trainings and courses on a very broad level from, I even did macrobiotics, for example, which is completely different. Yeah, and it's not for myself. I didn't have any huge health problems or I wasn't overweight, but I would have these energy dips during the afternoon or at the evening when my husband would want to watch a movie. I could only go halfway because I was asleep halfway through the movies. And we would have to stop and continue the movie the next evening. So we're always watching movies in two sessions because I was always asleep. And that's completely gone. So no more afternoon dips, no more memory problems or loss of focus. I'm completely energized. So this, for myself, the only thing that's brought me is amazing energy. And I think because of that, I can do so many things because I have big projects. I'm running this thing on my own. And I don't think I would have been able to do that without this diet, without this ketosis energy.
Yeah, no, it's amazing what people can accomplish when they're doing this. I was just talking with Doug Reynolds at the last conference I was at, and he, between putting on all the amazing conferences that he was able to put on, he just wrote a book in the course of a few months and got it published. And it's like realizing that, dude, there's no way you could have had the energy to do that if you weren't ketogenic. To be able to do the volume of work you guys are doing out there is incredible. How did you find the transition? Another thing that I've heard a lot from people in the Netherlands is, bread being, you mentioned potatoes also, but like bread is a mainstay staple that a lot of people in the Netherlands couldn't dream of stopping to consume. Was it difficult for you to transition?
No, for me personally, it wasn't. But the Netherlands is really famous for its bakeries. We have so many types of bread, really good bread, very tasty bread. I can totally imagine that people find it hard to let go of their daily bread. For me personally, it wasn't too big a transition. I had already shifted from eating more bread and more carbs to a more paleo kind of lifestyle. So I'd already ditched the bread. So for me, it wasn't a hard transition. But yeah, when you learn all these things about what food does for you, what anti-nutrients can do, which are also in grains and in bread, it just made so much sense to me that I didn't have a hard time stopping eating it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And you already mentioned some of the benefits, maybe unexpected benefits. I think a lot of people realize when they start the diet, namely the energy, mental health is a lot better, memory is a lot better. Did you notice anything physical? It doesn't sound like you've struggled with weight in your life or had any health conditions, but did you notice anything physically that was a little bit different after changing the diet?
Yeah, much more stamina. Yeah. I felt stronger, but I could. I have a bicycle, of course. Being in the Netherlands, you need a bicycle, right?
Absolutely.
And we also cycle here with any kind of weather, with my shopping in my basket and everything. So I'm really heavily loaded, and it just all became very much lighter. So I could cycle uphill. We do have a couple of hills here. Everything else is flat, but. Everything would be so much easier, running up the stairs, having more stamina, getting out of breath less quickly. I'm not a great sports person, but I really felt my condition improve. So yeah,
that's great. Okay, so as you're putting this into practice, you're noticing all these benefits. How were you implementing diet in your professional work? What resources did you have to provide for people, or how would you explain it to people to make it seem like it was something that they could do and receive even more benefits than just the original work that you were doing before?
Yeah, well, like I said, I did a training with the Real Meal Revolution for the Benting Coach, and there they have this extensive program in English, of course. So I made a deal with Jonna, Jonna Proudfood. I really want to use this material. But can I use it in Dutch? He said, sure, go ahead, because we need to get it out there as well. So the thing that I offer now is based on the Real Meal Revolution, but it's evolved since then, and there's been a couple of changes and upgrades. So that's what we still use. We have keto diet lists or nutrition lists people can download online. I have an online program they can use, so all the information is in there. They can do they can follow the lessons and do all kinds of what do you call it? Assignments. So I send them into their kitchen, clean out your kitchen cabinets. Read the labels on your food, on your products, so they know what to look for. I had them looking for a new recipe. So what I really want to do for them is not follow a meal plan, but to figure out your own, because I can decide for you what you like to eat, right? I don't know if you have children or if you have day or night shifts or what kind of work you're doing, if you're on the road a lot, if you eat in the office or at home. I don't know. And I don't know what your possibilities are. I don't know what your budget is. But I'm sure I can teach you what it is all about. I can teach you the skills so you can develop your own ketogenic or low-carb, high-fat lifestyle that you can follow for years and years to come. So you're not dependent on my recipes or on any meal plans. There are plenty of recipes and meal plans out there. So I can direct them to certain websites or to certain books, for example, just to get started. But the main thing is to find your own way in this. And once you found that, you can also adjust and adjust as you go along. And just find your own way and you'll be good for years. Of course, there are some hurdles, things they need help with. The famous keto flu is also something that people bump into. I just explain it to them and tell them how to fix that and make sure that you get enough salt and everything. And usually what I did back then and what I tell to my own students right now is that at the beginning, people really need to be held by their hands, for example. They need to be able to call you or text you whenever they have a question. And that's only during the first couple of weeks. And then you hear them less and less and less. So that means they're getting to grips with it. And at some point, they're only coming in for checkups. Okay, how are you doing? How's your weight? How is your waist
circumference.
That's a word.
That's a word.
Or even metabolic health checks. We do that as well. But usually they have found their own way, and they just need some adjustments whenever that's needed. But they don't lean on us as much anymore as in the beginning. And I think that's a good sign. Yeah.
I think that's a really good sign. I love that approach. I think that's very practical, doing it in a way that you're teaching that person skill sets that they can use, like you said, for many, many years or the rest of their life if they choose to, without giving them, you know, exact specifics, I think is a really great way to be able to do that. And it sounds like you've had a similar experience. If somebody is motivated and they're willing to change their diet, compliance can actually be pretty good. It's not that difficult. Yeah, like you said, there's a few hurdles in the beginning and people need help. And, you know, we certainly try to keep our phones available to us when people need to call or text or whatever in the beginning. But have you also found that compliance is pretty pretty easy, relatively speaking, as long as somebody is motivated to make changes and they're seeing such improvements in their health?
Absolutely, and especially because it's quite the metabolic change is quite quick. So if there's somebody coming in saying, I want to lose weight, or I want to have more energy or improve my health, but I'm still struggling, usually get them up to speed, let them cut their carbs, up the fats a little, so they gently go into ketosis, and then their body supports their good intentions, because they don't have any cravings anymore, they feel more satiation, they feel great, and they have more energy, and that makes it easier for them to comply, to keep this up.
Very well explained. What do you consider some of the most foundational foods on a ketogenic diet, especially in the context of where you are in the world? Like, what foods are very popular and easy for people to get onto as far as like a foundation of a ketogenic diet? And obviously, again, knowing that other people can individualize as they need to, what things do you tend to find like this is like the basics?
Well, Holland is a country of cheese, of course. So plenty of that, plenty of dairy. But there's also a drawback for dairy, because not everybody can tolerate dairy or cheese. But we have plenty of low carb vegetables, plenty of meat, eggs, poultry, fish. Of course, we're also by the sea, so we have plenty of fresh fish. So no problems at all.
No problem. Yeah. Beef is not a problem where you are. Easy to find, inexpensive.
Well, even here, there's the transition going on from meat-based diets to plant-based diets. So we have this discussion going on here as well. But still, meat is everywhere available. We do see prices go up, but I think that's worldwide the same thing. But it's you can still buy it everywhere, all kinds of quality levels. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Awesome. And then you kind of already alluded to this, but it sounds like it's so much changed your practice, because you were putting maybe some of the supplementation stuff first and then trying the diet on the side. But it sounds like over time, the diet just came to be more and more effective. How do you see the role of things like supplementation now after somebody has changed their diet? And again, hopefully that makes like the biggest difference. I would expect that to be the case. How do you view supplementation currently?
So it's very different than before. I use it less and less and less, even for myself, but also for the people we work with. I don't have a practice anymore myself. I've mainly focused on the education and the online programs, but I do work with quite a lot of orthomolecular therapists that are still transitioning from using supplements first and then nutrition. And they're also switching around now from nutrition first, make sure somebody is metabolically healthy. And sometimes you can use some supplements to make that transition work better. When they're lacking some nutrients, for example, it can be hard to make that transition. So they need for example, they need more B vitamins or Q10 just to support their energy metabolism. But once they've made it, this transition, they don't need it anymore because they're fine. Yeah, so you can use supplements to support the process. And I think like things like vitamin D or magnesium, for example, those are like things that you need like all through the year usually.
Yeah.
All the other stuff that can go at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though you don't have a practice currently, I was going to ask you about that. If, you know, obviously supplementation is highly, highly individualized, but I was wondering along those same lines, B vitamins, D vitamin, magnesium, if there were some core kind of general supplements that by and large, a lot of people are going to be deficient in, are there any others that really jump out as like, again, very highly individual, but generally speaking can be beneficial for people?
Yeah, omega-3, the omega-3 fats acids are also a good idea, because even if people eat keto, it all depends really. I just thought I should mention that first. It really depends on how you implement a ketogenic diet. You can do this through all kinds of keto products that are really low in quality, or you can do a ketogenic diet based on whole foods. Somebody doing a ketogenic diet based on whole foods needs less of any supplements at all, because it's already in the food. But even here in Netherlands, we have less quality of the soil, so the vegetables they contain less nutrients. So it may be a good idea if somebody really has a long way to go to just supplement with a multivitamin, for example, just to make sure that they have everything they need. But in this part of the world where it's winter here now, so it's quite gray and not a lot of sunshine, vitamin D is then a very good idea. Well, minerals can be a good thing to add because of the poor soil quality. We have lots of greenhouses here. We're also famous for that. So you have huge, huge greenhouse complexes. But vegetables coming from a greenhouse don't have as much nutrients as vegetables growing on the soil, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it all depends on where the person stands right now, what kind of nutritional habits they have, what kind of budget they have. Do they buy their groceries at a really cheap store, or do they go to an organic health shop, for example? So depending on that, and depending on what health issues they have, I would adjust the supplementation to that. Yeah.
Cool. Oh, that's a great answer. I've heard conflicting things about this. I'm just curious what your opinion is. I can't say that I've ever seen somebody have an issue with this, but in your opinion, would you prefer that somebody got their omega-3 through eating more fish and whole forms of protein and not take the supplement? Or like I've heard the argument that omega-3 supplements, you have to be careful because there may be some oxidation of the polyunsaturated fats, which an omega-3 is. Do you see any concerns with that? Do you have a preference one way or another, or do you see benefit either way?
I think it would be a very good idea to get the omegas in balance. So less omega-6 and more omega-3, preferably through food, through eggs, through fish, everything. Because you don't really know what the quality of the omega-3 in the bottle or in the capsule is. It could be oxidized, yes. So, and I think food should be the first source and not supplementation. Only when you find that people are really eating too much omega-6, or they're inflamed, or they have low-grade inflammation, for example, then I would suggest upping omega-3 through supplementation, for example. But really, really look out for a good brand that has added vitamin E to it, just to make sure it doesn't oxidize as quickly. But
okay.
Yeah,
I that's a good tip. That.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good tip. And I love the way you explain that. You explain that by saying, like, it's also the omega-6. You know what I mean? Like we're taking, you know, we're eating all these oxidized foods and then thinking we need to take a bunch of antioxidants. And so people are, you know, having exotic berries from Brazil and like lots of blueberries and things like that for antioxidants, when it's like, we should probably be thinking about the other thing. If you're cutting out all the other stuff where our diets are so imbalanced and so much omega-6, the need for omega-3 is probably going to be less. And we probably can get all that we need from the food that we're consuming. So yeah, I think that's a really great way to look at it.
Exactly, exactly. That's also the thing I usually explain to people. You don't need all your antioxidants if you're metabolically healthy, and if your food is in order, you need less of it. So please make sure first that you're healthy, that you're getting the right nutrients, you're getting the right foods. And then you can also have a discussion on what are the right foods for people. Do they need to be plants? Do you need to be more animal-based? That all depends on what's going on with somebody, I think.
Yeah. Okay. On that note, with your own personal journey, how has your ketogenic evolved over time? Like, have you toyed around with a no carbohydrate kind of carnivore style diet ever?
Yes.
Have you noticed that you've eaten less vegetables in, you know, currently than in the past? Like, how has that evolved for you?
Yes. When I first started out, I would eat mainly, not vegetarian. I would eat meat and poultry and everything and fish. But I do see a subtle change to less vegetables and more animal products. So sometimes I'm just carnivore because I don't feel like eating vegetables. And before I would worry about that because I would need my vegetables, right? That's what I was thinking. But I've done a couple of weeks of carnivore, really worked well for me. But I also found it a bit boring. And I did find it a bit of a problem with the rest of my family, and I do like a bit of vegetables, but the huge piles of vegetables I would eat before, I don't do that anymore. So I'm more animal-based keto now.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. It's interesting. Like, a lot of people who do carnivore, they do it for some specific reason. Like, I find for myself, sweet and sugar can be for me a bit addictive. It's not the worst if I deviate, but I will have cravings that are really uncomfortable, and I'll crave really crappy food again. And if I get over that, I don't have that anymore. And I also don't have anxiety, which is really nice. And that for me is a motivator to kind of stay on. A lot of people, they don't need to do that. They don't need to be on a no carbohydrate diet. They can moderate a little bit better. They can have a piece of fruit and it doesn't cause them cravings. They can have vegetables. One thing I think most people would agree on is, like, if nothing else, even if all things were equal, it is a little bit more convenient to not be buying and cooking and throwing away all these vegetables that we thought we all needed and we thought tasted amazing, when really they just tasted amazing when they were cooked in butter and had salt on them. You know, if we can save the money we were spending, the time we were spending, and all that wasted food, maybe we're just, like, really lazy. Have you found that to be the case as well?
I'm not sure if I would call it lazy, but it's just people find it hard to believe that vegetables are not the big thing they are that we always thought they were. When I tell them about the anti-nutrients and that you can definitely live on a carnivore diet, it's very hard to grasp for most people. Because it's we're so brainwashed into believing that the vegetables or a plant-based diet is the best for us, the best for the planet and for everyone. So it's really, really difficult. And we do see a lot of discussions going on in the practices, but also with the clients, but also on social media, on LinkedIn, for example. There are huge discussions going on.
Yeah, for sure.
But I also say to people, we have to start where you're at. And what are you going to do this for? What's your health goal? Do you just want to lose a couple of kilos and just want to lose some weight? Or do you have a really serious health condition? And most people that are now going towards a plant-based diet, I don't see them improve, except for when they come from a real junk food diet. If they're on ready-made sauces or junk food or takeaway meals, and they transition to a more plant-based diet, yes, sure, they'll improve because they leave out all junk and they eat more whole foods. So that's why what I found when I first started out with my practice as a whole food nutritionist. Sure, they would improve, but there was still a long way to go. So, and if somebody has transitioned to this plant-based diet, and at first they will feel better, but then they start feeling worse again. And they tend to go even more strictly on this plant-based diet. They go towards veganism, for example. And even that can work for them for a short period of time. And then they're confronted with the deficiencies and they have to go and find something else. You can't go any stricter than that. You have to live off the air, right? And we do find when they start reintroducing some animal-based products, like even if just eggs or goat milk, for example, because somehow they seem to think that goat milk is better than cow milk. I can imagine why they think that. They do see some improvements, but it's such a big mind shift for them to transition from plant-based to meat-based. And once they experience what it does to them, how their health improves, how their sleep improves, how their energy improves. It's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah. I see that with my clients all the time as well. So yeah, thank you for explaining that. As part of this conference that I was just attending, Dave Feldman hosted a debate between Dr. Peter Ballerstedt, who's in the animal agriculture kind of business and low carbohydrate space, with somebody who is promoting a vegan diet, Chris McCaskill, something. Anyway, and the two of them had this debate, and I really respect the debate on the vegan side. It was very respectful. They gave each other enough time to explain things. But and I'm trying to be as open-minded as possible. I'm listening to the arguments, and his arguments were going all over the place, whether it was like what's best for human health, what's best for the planetary health and all this stuff. And the arguments are just not very convincing. They're using numbers that don't really feel right. Every time I drive by a cow pasture, I don't necessarily see tons of pollution, clogging up the air and then consuming tons of resources. That doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. And the arguments for the vegan side, again, it's much better than a processed food diet and will probably help in the short term. But it was a lot of very circular arguments, a lot of straw man arguments. It didn't really seem to like go anywhere. And it was also like very scattered. It wouldn't stay in one kind of topic. And so hard to justify. And I definitely have a ton of respect for the guy to show up at a largely low carbohydrate conference and be promoting a vegan and not get booed off the stage. But that said, like, I think the arguments, I don't know, if you've got a bit of common sense, I think you can see through some of the arguments that the numbers they're using and stuff just doesn't really add up.
Yeah. I had the great pleasure of meeting Peter Ballerstedt in person last year in Switzerland, and we did a little walk around the lake together with Anthony Chafee, for example. We were all there, and he was talking to us about regenerative agriculture and about the cows and trees and everything. It's mind-blowing. And once you hear this, you can't deny it anymore. It's so logical.
Yeah.
It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And
we were talking
I,
off...
I,
oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'm very lucky. I moved last year. I went from the big city Rotterdam to a very tiny village on the Belgian border, and here we have lots of cows and sheep in the outside in the fields, and there's this this natural butchery right across the streets, and you can see the cows walking in the fields, and next year they'll be in the freezer, right? And you can buy them from there, and you just know these are really healthy animals. They've had good food. They lived off the grass. They didn't have any medicines. They were treated in a very respectable way. They had a good life. And I have no problem with eating their meat because we took care of them. Now they take care of us. And I think that's a really good approach for that.
Yeah, that's really well said. Dr. Ballerstedt is absolutely amazing. Such a great guy. And if nothing else, he's just so kind. So is Dr. Chafee. So now that you've gotten into the space, you started your podcast, which is an amazing resource for people in the Netherlands in particular. You have also done some of those English speaking episodes, which are fantastic. It's not as many of the conferences that happen around you that happen around me. So I'm definitely very grateful that I get to travel to at least, two or three every single year. But what has it been like to, not only interview some of these people, but also meet them in person and see what their temperament is like, what their energy is like? How has that been for you?
The first time I went, my first conference was with Keto Life in Switzerland. And there was Peter, not Peter Ballerstedt last year, Ben Bigman, Dominic D'Agostino, those kind of people. I felt like a kid in Disneyland meeting my heroes. I was so excited. I couldn't believe it. And I didn't dare to say anything to them for the first 2 days, but they're so approachable. They're so friendly. They're really kind. And they're always so ready to answer any questions you have, explain all kinds of stuff. It's really, really amazing. Really, yeah.
I just don't know of any other field. There's conferences and lots of different topics. And I talk to people who go to these things, and there seems to be no comparison. Like you said, everybody in the field has been so happy and energetic and friendly, and will just sit there and talk to you and listen to you and want to know about your story. It's a really wonderful space to be in. And I think that's part of everybody being in a ketogenic state. Just the energy level is just absolutely just so high.
Yes, exactly.
That's amazing. Yeah. Okay, awesome. So as you're finding this information, obviously integrating it in what you're doing and what you're recommending for people, again, there weren't very many resources that you had that were in your native country. And so what was it like for you to want to get that message out there and be the first person, the pioneer, around your part to be able to share this?
Yeah, well, that was the thing that that I discovered when I started working with this. There wasn't anything in Dutch, hardly anything. But I also had my clients who were looking for recipes, for well, information sources. And there were a couple of books that had been translated into Dutch, so that's fine. And thank goodness it's getting more and more because we're very lucky to have the books by Georgia Ead and Chris Palmer translated into Dutch.
Good.
I think that those were the first translations into a foreign language into Dutch. So we're very happy with that, very, very grateful. So thank you very much to the publisher who did that. And that really brought on a shift. But still, that's why I started my whole business, to make a transition from having a practice and coaching people to more educational programs, because there are more and more people looking for support, for somebody who could help them or to guide them along the way, and they couldn't find any health professionals or doctors or dietitians who were able to work with this. I had my colleagues, my therapist colleagues coming up to me saying, "Where did you learn this? I want to do this too. Is there any program in Dutch?" And I said, No, but you can go to Real Meal Revolution, you can go here, you go there, Nutrition Network, for example." They would go, "Yeah, but it's all in English." And the Dutch, they can sing along with English songs, they can watch English television, but studying in English is quite something different. So that's when I started. Well, when I started thinking, perhaps I should create my own program because I have all this input, I have all this knowledge. I found so many interesting sources. I can replicate it for them in Dutch, so I can share this information and get it out there and make sure that there are professionals that people can turn to for help. And that's what I did. So that's why I started 5 years ago. And I think we're now over the 300 students who've joined our classes. So yeah, it's really taking off.
Wow. Oh, that's great. That's really encouraging. I've heard from other people, maybe this is more around the like England and, kind of Ireland area, that it's still to the point that if you told somebody about ketosis, a keto diet, or especially like a carnivore diet, it's not very well received. And plant-based is being pushed so heavily that it's really, really difficult. And they don't feel like they're getting a lot of traction. I would say around here, for the first time ever, I don't feel completely nuts talking to a stranger about a carnivore diet. And more often than not, I'm finding people have heard about it. They know somebody who's tried it, regardless of whether they're willing to do that or not. I would say even a year or two ago, that was not the case. And in the last few months, I've met several strangers who know at least about it and don't think it's all that bizarre. It is gaining traction where you are, is what it sounds like. It's getting a little bit more popular.
Yes, more and more. But what I do see is that it's the wisdom of the people, wisdom of the crowds. So there are many people trying this out for themselves, following a program, watching YouTube, listening to podcasts, educating themselves. But it's still not like a therapy. There are Facebook groups, for example, with tens of thousands of people in there in the Netherlands, where they're doing ketogenic diet or trying a carnivore diet, for example, and they're advising each other, helping each other out to make the most of it. And it's not always like precision nutrition, right? It's all general advice. You should try this, perhaps try this, or it's all really well meant, but not also very accurate. And it's still not therapy. So when there are people there with a serious health problem or even a mental health problem, I don't think they should get their coaching from a group like that. But on the other hand, there's the health professionals still closing the doors on metabolic ketogenic interventions, still saying, "No, it's dangerous. You need your carbs for your brain and your muscles," what the usual stuff they say. And there's this person who does a ketogenic diet who has really improved on it, but still has a few things to work on. And they go to their doctors or to a regular dietitian, and they will say, "Oh, you have to stop this diet because it's dangerous, right? You'll get into a ketoacidosis if you're not careful." Because they don't know what they're talking about, and they know about keto and that it's used for epilepsy patients, and that it's only used in the clinical setting. But it's nonsense if you want to lose weight, or it's nonsense if you want to turn around your diabetes, or you shouldn't do ketogenic diets for your thyroid, for example, or for your gut, because, well, your gut needs the fiber. So all the usual stuff. Yeah. You roll your eyes. I do that all the time. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
so,
yeah.
So there's a huge gap between people looking for help and people offering help. And that's the gap I'm trying to bridge there.
Yeah, that's great. It sounds like you're taking some huge strides in that way, and that's being received at least by a minority, but a growing number of health professionals. Mm-hmm. That's great. What is the general consensus around things like metabolic psychiatry? You've already mentioned Dr. Palmer, Dr. Ede. We've talked about Nicole Laurent, yeah. And this just incredibly wonderful field of metabolic psychiatry. As you said, using a ketogenic diet as a powerful intervention for somebody. How is that being received by the public when they hear that, and also health professionals, who at least are a little bit more open to it and understand that the diet is not dangerous to implement?
Yeah, well, metabolic psychiatry, it's still very early days here at the moment. We've had these books come out that's really, well, people have read these books, and they send me emails like weekly and even daily now because they're looking for help. So the patients there, the people who are experiencing mental health problems out there, are really looking for help, but there aren't any psychiatrists or mental health counselors or psychologists who are even open to ketogenic intervention. So I keep having to say to people, I'm sorry, I don't know anyone who can help you, because you need special guidance with your medication and with your therapies. And so we're looking to start multidisciplinary treatment teams, where there is a psychiatrist or a mental health counselor who can work together with the keto coach or a keto therapist. So to add one of those to the team and together help this person implementing a ketogenic diet with the help of the psychiatrist and the whole team there. And up till now, even today, I saw a call for help from one of our keto professionals who said, I have this person with bipolar disorder, and he's really reaching out because he wants to start a ketogenic diet, but we can't do anything without the help of psychiatrists, because we need someone who can monitor the medication, right? Could be dangerous. So that's still the stage that we're in. Last time that you spoke to Nicole Laurent, I met her several times now, and we've become friends. Just really, really, really nice person. What we did is I translated her program, her training that she does, into Dutch, and we adjusted it to the Dutch market together with my colleague Lita Jouwsma. She's a medical psychologist, and she knows the field here, because we had to make a couple of adjustments, so it also appeals to the Dutch mental health professionals. And only last month, we started a pilot group with 7 participants, with 3 psychiatrists, psychologists, and mental health counselors. And they are learning how the ketogenic diet works. They're not learning to implement themselves, but they're learning how to support a patient that is on a ketogenic diet and is going through some transitions that they need to be aware of, that they can have potentiation effects, for example, with a medication, or they can have all kinds of improvements or changes they're going through. And the medical team, the mental health team, needs to be aware of that, and they need to be able to support this patient in getting better through diet. So that's the thing we're trying to do here, is to, like I said, we're trying to bridge that gap between all those people reaching out, because even now, daily, I receive mails now. Last month, there was this program here on Dutch television with one of my friends and colleagues, Dr. Eline de Keijster, and she is assistant professor at the University of Leiden. And she's doing a lot of research into the ketogenic interventions for ADHD, autism, Alzheimer's disease, all that sort of thing. And we work together quite a lot. She was on television speaking about keto for the brain, and that really triggered a tsunami of reactions. People looking, they saw this program and they go, wow, where do I go? Where do I find help? And there's nobody. So I'm really proud to say that I have this platform for keto professionals with over 70 members of therapists and coaches they've been trained in the ketogenic diet, but they're not allowed to help these people because they're usually on medication. But they are here. So if there are any psychiatrists out there or mental health professionals that are even a little bit interested in would this work for my patients, please just send me an email, call out. I have someone who can help you implement a diet. And we can work together and build a network for all these people experiencing mental health problems who are looking for help and improvement.
Yeah,
so that's what we're working on. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, a long ways to go, but it's a great start. And to have, that popping up on television, people getting interested, I think is wonderful. You're very right about the deep prescription process of these drugs. They can become more potent. Potentiation is the term you use. The drugs can start working a lot more, and you can start having stronger side effects when you're coming off of these. And so working with a health professional is always recommended to be able to help with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Before we get more of the health professionals, on board and helping out with this in the correct way, have you found a lot of case studies to be really helpful? Like, do you ever tell people stories of people that you know that reverse things like bipolar or Alzheimer's or some of those either run of the mill or more serious kind of mental health disorders?
Yes, that's what I do in the podcast. That's the ones you couldn't hear because they're all in Dutch. So I have lots of people coming on the podcast, even sending me emails now from can I come on your show because I have this really beautiful story I'd like to tell you. And it's all kinds of people with all kinds of health issues, from fibromyalgia to MS there was one person who was experiencing lots of pain. She could hardly get out of bed. And then she did the keto switch challenge. She started from her bed, but at the end, it's only 2 weeks. The challenge is only 2 weeks. It's like a kickstart for people who are interested and just to get them started. And even within those first 2 weeks, she said, I'm walking up to the garden again to get the mail from the mailbox. And before, my husband would have to do that because I couldn't get down the stairs or get out of the house to even walk down the garden path to get my mail. And even the neighbor noticed, wow, you're walking. What's going on? So even in such a short period of time, people can improve very dramatically. And
that makes me even more sad. That I don't speak Dutch and I can't hear all those other episodes. I was wondering what the format was for some of the other episodes that I could only, take a guess at based on a few words that recognize. So they are mostly just like everyday people kind of stories and case studies and that kind of thing.
That kind of thing. And sometimes I just like to dive deep into a certain topic and explain about that. And I also had people saying, wow, it's like getting a lesson from you, because it's really a deep dive explaining how the mechanisms work, why they should do this or do that or leave out this. So it's also some episodes are all about learning. Other episodes are about interviews with people and their health stories and their improvements. And the interviews, of course, with the other professionals.
Are you ever surprised by how joyful it is to host a podcast and talk to people all around the world and collect their stories? Isn't it just amazing?
It is. And I didn't realize that at first, because with everything I usually do, do you know this TV character called Pippi Langstocking?
Yeah,
with the braids like that and her horse. And
That's
she
right.
has a famous thing that she says, I don't know how to do it, but I'll just do it anyway. I think I can do this. That's what I did. So that's how I started out my training programs. That's how I started out with my practice. That's how I started out with the podcast, just learning by doing and seeing what the response is. And I'm not a dietitian. I'm not a doctor. I don't have any medical training. I do have all kinds of therapeutical trainings and everything. And that's also quite difficult for me, because I feel like I'm not taking seriously, because I'm not a doctor or a registered nurse or dietitian or whatever. But by learning, by doing, I found out what the effects are, and I see what it does with people. And I'm not biased by my education. The funny thing is, I heard a podcast with you, with Philip Ovelia this morning. I think it was recorded about 2 years ago. And you said the exact same thing. Like you were a personal trainer, coach, And you were not a doctor and you were not a dietitian or anything. And it also makes you very free to do things that the doctors are not allowed to do because they're bound to their ethical codes and everything. And we're like free agents. And that really it made me very insecure at first because I didn't have any degrees or anything. I didn't feel like I had anything to bring in there. And that's what I talked about with Nicole. And she said, well, it's very important that you do this thing because, well, the doctors and the dietitians still have a long way to go before they can work with this or implement this. Might be 20, 30 years before it's mainstream. And in the meantime, there's somebody out there who's got to do this, who's got to share the information and just go out and stand up for it and make this accessible for people. And that's what I think what our role is here.
That's amazing. I just don't know. I don't know of any other topic of interest that anybody would go to the same lengths that you have gone to promote a message. Like it wouldn't be a sports team or, you know, any other type of a diet. Like it's just, there's something about learning about this that just grabs people in a way that they, as Nicole says all the time, she can't shut up about it. She doesn't want to stop talking about it. And they go to all these lengths, like you creating programs, doing the podcast. That's a tremendous amount of work. And, you know, starting from scratch and from the ground up, seeming like, and trying to get the message out there. I just don't see any other topic that anybody would literally change their career to pursue in the way that you have. And it's really very inspiring and really wonderful.
Well, thank you. And each success story just gives me goosebumps all over again. Every time. Yeah.
Me too. It's really wonderful.
That's all I need. Yeah. So
that's
I'm not
awesome.
Making any money off the podcast, or I'm not getting rich anyway in any way. So just pure drive. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Most people don't realize we're the ones actually paying for the podcast to be done. So it costs us money on our end. What is your vision for the future? It sounds like everything is going in an upward direction, probably not as quickly as any of us would like, but at least it sounds like it's going in the right direction. What do you see as far as like expansion of the company? How do you see this message getting out to more and more people?
Good question, because I have many dreams about how I would like to see this in the future. I really hope that someday this will be more accepted and or even mainstream, that when a person goes to the doctor, that the doctor will direct them towards a keto professional or towards a metabolic intervention or whatever. So I hope someday I'll be obsolete, that they don't need me anymore. So I can retire and start doing my own thing again. But slowly but surely there's something happening, but it's a long time yet.
Yeah, I don't know what you're going to do with yourself in retirement with all the work you're putting into this. You're going to have to come up with something to keep yourself very busy for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll think something by then. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. I am so grateful to Nicole that she was able to introduce us and that we were able to connect. It, as much as, you know, I'm like you and I absolutely love the opportunity to talk to a Gary Taubes, a Dr. Ben Bickman, some of these people who are just doing incredible work and getting the message out there. There's also so many people out there in their own kind of corner of the globe doing really great work. And it's great that you're noticing an uptick and people are paying more attention and health professionals are becoming interested. And I think your work is, like I said, just so inspirational. And I wish you the best in everything you continue doing. I'm so glad we had this conversation today. Where would you like people to go to find you, to connect with you and your work?
My webpage is in Dutch, so it's quite difficult to spell it out. But if you go to the Keto Podcast, then I'm sure you'll find me, and all the links are there, so the people can find me there. Yeah.
Gotcha. Perfect. And that has links to any like social media stuff that you do?
Absolutely. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm everywhere.
Excellent. We will be sure to link that. Like I said, Louisa, it is such a joy to chat with you. Your just incredible energy level and passion for this work is amazing. I hope that it continues to grow and it continues to inspire, again, most of the health professionals so that they can get out and multiply this across the population and really help cure some people. Because like you said, those stories cause all of us goosebumps. So thank you very, very much for all the amazing work you're doing. And thank you for taking time to be on our show today. We really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
It was such an honor. And this has been another episode of Balanced Body Radio.
Dankjewel voor het luisteren naar deze speciale aflevering van de Keto Podcast in samenwerking met Boundless Body Radio van Casey Ruff. Casey is mega productief en heeft heel veel interessante afleveringen en je vindt ze op YouTube of via zijn website. De links zet ik voor je in de show notes. Graag tot de volgende aflevering waarin we weer een Nederlandse gast aan het woord hebben. Tot dan!